No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the member of the NFL Wire from USA Today's sports media group. On the line with me is my co-host, Seth Cox from SB Nation's RevengeOfTheBirds.com and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. It's Super Bowl week, Seth, and unfortunately, it's not a Cardinal Super Bowl week, but it's still exciting because this is the last week of football for a long time. And then we get into the, you know, we get to the offseason fun stuff, all the speculation and rumors. But how excited are you for the week, for the championship week, for the Super Bowl title, to see what happens?
You know, I'm just excited because I'm going home this weekend, so that's all I'm excited about. I'll be in Arizona, so it'll be a good time. You know, the game's actually really intriguing to me. Because I want to see how good this Atlanta team is. Like, I see a lot of people questioning New England, which I think is odd, because didn't they just win a Super Bowl 2 years ago? So, I mean, and aren't they the greatest dynasty since the Packers? Like, I don't know. I just don't understand why people question them. So I'm
boring.
Yeah, it really is. But I'm very interested to see what happens with the Falcons this week, how good they are, and what they have. It can offense reign supreme? I mean, honestly, that's the biggest thing, because I think we would all agree that we expect this Arizona Cardinals offense to be in the same mold. They may not have as many playmakers right now, but you know, we still expect them to be just as good. So, you know, it's something to watch.
Well, tonight's show, recording on a Tuesday night, you know, originally this was going to be, we were basically going to talk Super Bowl type stuff, talk Senior Bowl, talk Super Bowl. We didn't really anticipate much in the way of news on the Cardinals, but we've got some actually kind of surprise stuff. So we're going to be talking about that up on the show. So we've got some coaching changes, potential updates for the status of Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer. We're going to talk some Senior Bowl, some of the prospect we are for the mostly you're just going to listen to Seth talk about players he knows, and I'm just going to take his word for it because he's my draft guy that I lean on for pretty much a whole bunch of stuff. And we will get to the Super Bowl, and that this is a Cardinals show, Cardinals centric show, but heck, why not? It's Super Bowl week. Let's talk the Super Bowl, what we think is going to happen. So we got that coming up on this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Before we get started, this episode is brought to you by BlueApron.com, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. If you are like my family or like Seth's family when they're together these days, you always want to do more at home, do more home cooking, eating together as a family. Blue Apron gives you the opportunity to do that, to be able to have high-quality meals with restaurant-type dishes made yourself in your own home, by a company with food brought to you by a company that does things responsibly. They have relationships and partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers. All their meat and seafood is sourced and prepared and raised responsibly. Your impact is minimal on the environment because they only send you just enough that you need, so there's hardly any waste. And, you know, in terms of variety, coming up on the menu for the next little bit, they've got a cashew chicken stir fry with tango and with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, a crispy barramundi with quinoa and roasted carrot. So it's, they're all the type they're, if you want to try new foods or eat foods that are, that you might not make yourself, it's perfect. Not all ingredients are created equal. Their high quality ingredients make a real difference. And it's important to know where your food comes from. It's affordable. It costs less than $10 per person per meal. It delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients. And it's fresh. It's easy. And it's exciting to try new things. Check out this week's menu. For you listeners of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, you get your first three meals free with free shipping. If you still have, if you haven't taken advantage of that, go head on over to blueapron.com/red. You'll get your first three meals for free, free shipping. You'll love how good it feels, tastes, and to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Again, that's blueapron.com/red. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And that brings us to the first segment of Rise Up Sea Red, and we're going to talk about, well, the news. There's a plenty of news right now. We're going to start with the biggest, and that is the decision, the coming soon decision of Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald appears to be ready to make his announcements. And it seems to be leading towards one way. Based on what we heard today, he was on the golf course for, at the TPC. They've got the, you know, the Waste Management Open this weekend here in Arizona. They have some events. He was there for the Special Olympics putting challenge to the media and said his decision is coming pretty soon. And he's pretty much made up his mind. Based on what you're hearing, Seth, what is your impression? Do you think he's coming back or not?
Honestly, I have no idea. You know, you want to say he is, but in the same time, like, why is it such a mystery still? Like, if you're coming back, why not just say you're coming back? That's what I don't get. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, is, I don't mean this in a negative way, but it doesn't matter what we, the fans, know. So, That's the reality. Like, if he's already informed the Cardinals and said, hey, I want to announce it myself, but, you know, after the Super Bowl or something, you know, but I'm coming back, that then that's all that matters. You know, because as much as we like to think that we're the most important part of what goes on with the Arizona Cardinals, we're not always. So, you know, but I don't understand the secrecy if he's coming back. That's the one thing I don't get. It's like, why? Like, why is this such a hush-hush thing?
The thing for me is, you know, maybe deep in his heart knows he wants to, but he just wants to make sure. It's, especially having set up the Pro Bowl with an injury. He didn't say what it was. It was kind of undisclosed, but I suspect it was the knee. I think he's waiting to find out how his knee holds up or how it feels after the season. You know, he had the MCL strain early in camp. He was on the injury report for it. So it wasn't a Richard Sherman thing, guys. It wasn't quite like that where it didn't go unreported. He was on the injury report for it at some point during the season. And I can tell you that knee was treated. It was wrapped. It was, you know, you could tell it was something of concern because of the way it was handled during the season before and after games. So maybe that's it. Comments, the things that he says, that he said in particular talking about, you know, that you know, top 10 offense, top 10 defense. He really thinks that the Cardinals can make a go for it. So it makes you want to think that, yeah, he's coming back. But at the same time, if he were leaning that way, yeah, why? Like, how is he going to make this announcement? Because if he's going to play, it's not going to be a big press conference. I mean, I'm going to hold a press conference and say, yeah, I'm playing. It's going to be a tweet or you know, I speculated that the notion, you know, if he happens to win the Walter Payton Man of the Year, which he is up for this weekend with the NFL honors, show. That might be a case where he wins, that he says, "Hey, see you next year, see you next season."
Yeah, that could be.
But if it's,
But what if it's the other thing? What if it's that he wins it and he announces that he's retiring because he's, you know, accomplished everything that he can except, you know, winning a Super Bowl?
That could be it. Except for the way we've seen other retirements, it comes in the form of a press release, a press conference here locally, where all the media gets to speak. That's how Kurt Warner did it. Darnell Dark came back. Adrian Wilson did it. It would seem to me if he were going to retire that it's going to be a much bigger deal than, because when you say you're coming back, you're not going to have a press conference about it. You're just going to say it somewhere. He's going to tweet it. He's going to say it at the awards announcement. It's going to be something after the Super Bowl. But I really don't anticipate anything before the Super Bowl because knowing how Larry is, he's a company guy. So he's not going to try and take the attention away from the big game. And it would surprise me if he announced something on Saturday. I think it's not coming until at least next week. And he's already said that February, at least February. So a couple of days, couple of weeks, as he alluded to. But my gut, at least with him, even though I was really wishy-washy before, I think it's leaning towards coming back. I think. But maybe I'm just hopeful because I think Bruce Arians.
And that's the thing is I just – honestly, I think it more goes to does he know what Carson's going to do? And as we get to the Carson Palmer portion of this segment, for some reason, Carson Palmer's thinking about retiring, apparently, or not sure if he wants to play. I don't know. Has he even said something yet? Like, is he saying, has he even said like, oh, I want to take some, like he just like that came up with Arians, didn't it?
Well, he said after New Orleans. So it was the last home game of the season. He said he expects to come back, but he hasn't thought about it. He expects to come back. Then there was the thing that Arians said he hasn't heard from Palmer yet. Palmer texted Bickley and said, I guess nothing's official until it's official, but it's not like he was withholding. He said, I always take this time of year off. So, that's an interesting – it's kind of an interesting thing. And then Ian Rappaport's report that came out just a couple days ago. How beat up he was and how it seems to be the feeling around the league that Palmer's done. So
that's why I wonder about Fitz, because maybe he knows Palmer's going to call it a career, but he's waiting because he doesn't want to he wants to give Palmer a minute to like you said, is that really what you want to do? Because I don't know. Like, it would just be so much easier if these guys would just be like, hey, we're coming back. Because this whole offseason, really, I mean, all of our previous – and this is a selfish thing, not even from a fan perspective, but from a writing and podcasting perspective. Everything we do is with the base thought that Palmer and Fitz are going to be back. Because if Palmer retires, you assume Fitz retires, right? It would make more sense for Palmer to return without Fitz than Fitz without Palmer, I would think, at least. But
especially things that Fitz has said before about,
he doesn't want to do it again.
He doesn't want to do it again. You keep riding a good thing as long as it goes. And if it's Drew Stanton or Mike Glennon or some rookie,
is that going to be what he wants to do?
You can't imagine, because the only thing left is a title. That's literally the only thing left. And is anyone honestly going to take the Cardinals seriously if it's not Carson Palmer starting? Drew Stanton's nice, and they might contend for a division, maybe. But he's going to get hurt. He always has. Mike Glennon. As promising as Glennon and all the reports, John Gambadores is dead set on this, is that the Cardinals love Glennon. But they didn't draft him. and they haven't traded for him. And the Bucks went out of their way to draft a guy. Not granted, it was Jameis Winston. So it's not like Glennon was some franchise quarterback. He put up good. He looked promising his rookie year, but what's happened since then? They're not going to be title contenders if it's not Carson Palmer. He's really the piece that matters.
Yeah, and so with that in mind, like, you know, there's no preview of the offseason. There's no review of the season. Like, there's nothing without the knowledge of what these guys are going to do, right? Because everything hinges on that, because we're talking about a rebuild at this point if Palmer and Fitz retire. You know, it may not be a complete overhaul rebuild, but you're probably not going to re-sign Calais or A.Q. Shipley, because you're going to want to let Gunter and Kimbiche and Bame all play at that point. So I don't know. Like, this whole offseason sucked because it's taking so long. Like, I don't know.
It's because the Cardinals weren't in the playoffs. I mean, we had the playoffs, and so we've been done with Cardinals playing since New Year's Day. So we've had a whole month now. This is January 31st. We've had an entire month of Cardinals not doing anything.
Literally, because they haven't even announced whether or not they're going to play next year.
Right. Everyone else has done stuff. Heck, you know. And on a secondary note, hey, at least we're not the 49ers, because that's a hot mess. That's, thank goodness for the 49ers in the division, because I don't know what else we would do.
Did you, not to get too far off subject, but did you see, I think it was Gambo that blasted Niners Nation report on Terry McDonough? So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, and the girl who reported it, she's an actual reporter, so it's not some, you know, it's not some hack job out there just throwing crap out. This is, she did some legwork, and that's what she came back with. And I wrote about it today because the first I had heard about it was when I was listening to the radio. So I dug up the story, found it out, and then saw that Gambo did gotten on the horn and talked to a few people, and it was, couldn't have been further from the truth. So. It didn't jive with anything we'd heard around here.
No.
Fitz himself made it a public tweet to say, hey, he deserves a GM job.
Yeah.
Unless this is a big con by the entire team towing the company line and say, let's get him out of here.
Exactly. That's a lot of work to do that.
That really is. Now, this is leading to, after Fitz, this is leading to the bombshell that local radio host / reporter Mike Jarecki threw out there when he appeared on his former co-host's afternoon show, The Drive, on Fox Sports Radio 910 here locally in Phoenix. And Jarecki dropped the bomb, telling us, which really, if we're going to take this at face value, this is, Cardinals fans, you have reason to panic. Carson Palmer has listed his home to sell, has taken his kids out of school, and has moved out of state. You don't do that when you're planning to play in Arizona one more year, do you? I don't think so, right?
No, and you and I talked about this a little bit before the show. Our buddy Gannell on Twitter, she said something that made sense. Like, more than the house selling thing, and more than, you know, whether they moved out of state or not, the thing that would make sense if he was going to abruptly retire would be him pulling his children out of school so they don't have to face the asinine behavior of adults if their dad was to, and we're not saying that they are, but if their dad was to retire, kind of out of the blue. So, you know, it could mean nothing. I don't know. I'm not there right now. Has anything crazy happened within our education system? Crazier happened within our
education? No, nothing really. And And to be honest, I doubt they go to a public school.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Exactly. So, yeah, you wonder, you know what? First, I guess we need to address that Kent Summers has reported that his house is not for sale. He has not responded on any of the other parts about the kids being taken out of school and that they're living in or they're moving to another state. He has not reported on that. So, but he has reported that the house is not on the market. So, I don't know. I mean, do you take this with a big grain of salt? I mean, the one thing that I wouldn't do if I was a reporter is ever try to find where kids or where players' kids are at school. But I understand that, you know, these guys have jobs and they're trying to break news and get clicks and all that stuff. But I think the kids...
It's a really interesting tidbit. And the fact that, you know... When you hear that, you're like, oh, the alarm. So as Dan Bigley talked about, the fire alarm. You pull the fire alarm when you hear the what Jarecki reported. And then, you know, Summers' report, you know, pokes holes in it a little bit, but not completely, because that just means it's not for sale. It just could mean it's not listed yet. Or isn't showing as listed yet. So it doesn't necessarily disprove what Jarecki reported, especially when he doesn't say anything about the rest of the stuff. And maybe that it became abrupt. And that's the thing. It, obviously, right now, the first initial response is what your fans do. Yes. Sound the fire alarm. It looks bad. But maybe it's not. I mean, one... if it's completely true. Two, you know, there's Southern California people already, so it's not completely out of the realm of possibility where they decide, okay, I'm going to go ahead. You know, you play out this 1 year and we're going to just go live in San Diego again while you play your final year here. Or they just went on vacation. They pulled their kids out of school to take a week off in California on Super Bowl week.
Before, yeah. Wait, and, you know, I was thinking about this, and I didn't tell you this before the show, but I was just thinking about this. Like, what if they decided this is his last year? Like, they're like, okay, this is our last year. Like, let's get set up where we're going to be for our future, you know, and I'll commute my last year as opposed to having you guys all here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of a different approach or idea on the whole thing, but I don't know. Like, it wouldn't be any more preposterous than they up and move January 31st of 2017, you know, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks into the new school year for their kids. So,
right.
You know, maybe it was, oh, we're going to, you know, we've decided to move to, like you said, Southern California. We're going to get everything set up. We want the kids to be there for, you know, a year and then we'll, and Carson will be here for, you know, it's all speculation, but who knows?
Well, and here's the thing that's weird for me, and this is out of Palmer's mouth earlier. I don't remember at which point during the season or preseason he talked about, but he spoke openly about Arizona being home. Maybe it was training camp. This was going to be his last stop. This is home. He's got a great school for his kids. They've got a church. It sounded... he made it seem like that regardless of, you know, being California people, that this was their ending spot, that this was going to remain to be home unless something drastically changed. Or maybe the source of the report is off base. So, but yes, this is definitely which makes the Fitz thing weird. Cause on one hand, to me, it feels like Fitz is probably coming back But Fitz coming back without Palmer doesn't make any sense at all.
Not a lick. It just, it doesn't. And so that's why I'm so confused is probably not the right word, but like, you know, I just don't understand what's going on. Cause you nailed it. Like you're not like Fitz isn't going to do this again with another new quarterback. Even if it's Drew Stanton, like does he really want to play with Drew Stanton? Like he's done that. He played with Kevin Cobb. He played with John Skelton. Like he's played with below average quarterbacks. So I don't know.
So for those of you listening, even though it sounds like the answers are coming soon, it seems every bit as confusing as it did before.
Absolutely.
More confusing because it seemed a foregone conclusion that Palmer was coming back, and then wait, what? Maybe what?
Yeah, now it's like now you do a double take, like what is going on? Because none of this makes any sense.
So there were some other changes made with the Arizona Cardinals that happened on the coaching staff. Another area, which guess what? It was a surprise because Bruce Arians at the end of the season was adamant that there's not going to be changes on his staff. And obviously, had Harold Goodwin gotten a head coaching job, then that would have been different. So what happens is we get news. Well, first it comes through the national rumors, and then the Cardinals announce it. They have a new quarterbacks coach in Byron Leftwich, who was an intern with the team. Now, former first-round pick, drafted just a few picks behind Carson Palmer. He's a little bit younger than Carson Palmer and is very familiar with the Bruce Arians system, as he was on the Pittsburgh Steelers as a backup when Arians was offensive coordinator there. He's now the quarterbacks coach. Freddie Kitchens, who was the quarterbacks coach and when he was on Ken Wisenhunt's staff was tight ends coach, now moves over to running backs coach, which is interesting because that meant that Stump Mitchell is no longer with the staff. It was later deleted about how it was the Cardinals not doing it. Then I saw another report. I saw what Jarecki had said, that it was a Stump's decision to leave, and Arians at the golf course today on Tuesday confirmed that Stump Mitchell decided on his own to leave the staff, which opened up a position. Kitchens moves over to running back, and Byron Leftwich handles the quarterbacks. Anything alarming with that in your opinion or earth-shattering? Because for me, I don't see it necessarily being all that impactful unless we're dealing with a new quarterback this year.
I think the biggest thing on this one is that I don't know if Byron Leftwich is a good teacher. Like, I don't know anything about Freddie Kitchens, so it's kind of the same thing, right? But Leftwich never fixed his motion in the NFL, and that was one of the biggest drawbacks to him as a player. So let's play Seth's fantasy world, and the Cardinals are able to somehow get Blake Bortles from the Jaguars. Like, is he the guy you want teaching Blake Bortles how to throw the football? When Bortles apparently has a big windup and you know, needs to refine and shorten it. Like, that's the only thing that worries me. Other than that, I mean, like you said, it's not really going to mess with Palmer at this point. So I think I think the question is, how does he teach? And you know, we're really not going to get anything on that until a while,
right? And then obviously the part where you wonder is, well, why did Stump Mitchell leave?
Hopefully there's no dissension within the, but it could be he felt like he was due for the Harold Goodwin role shortly,
And then that's the thing. I dug up a story from, I think it was NFL trade rumors or pro rumors or something like that, that had quotes from his agent. This was back months ago, I think back in October, where his agent said that Mitchell was ready for the next level. So basically he was ready to do more than be a running backs coach, offensive coordinator, head coach at a college, basically that he wanted to do more, or his agent suggested that he was ready to, and was going to try and pursue that for him. You know, the Jets had an offensive coordinator opening, and they have a running backs coach opening still there with Todd Bowles. And there's a connection there. I mean, there's the possibility perhaps that he could go there, or even get the, you know, that designated assistant head coach offense, and then coach the running backs, which become that title is more money. But it sounds like, just, you know, if I'm reading the tea leaves, as they say, it probably was a case where he wasn't going to be able to, because one, you've already got Harold Goodwin. Two, now as what we see with Freddie Kitchens, it would appear that Arians is preparing Kitchens to be the next offensive coordinator when Goodwin, as Arians believes that Goodwin will be a head coach.
Right. So, you know, it's one of those things, I don't know, like, you know, maybe a guy just felt slighted. Maybe that's all it is. And we all want to feel like we're on the move up, right? And not just staying stagnant of where we are. So,
doesn't want to make more money, honestly.
Right. And so I think, I mean, that's what we got to hope, right? I mean, again,
and he's been a running backs coach for a long time. Yeah. A long time.
He was with the Wisenhunt staff, wasn't he?
He was not.
No,
he was brought over.
Okay.
No, he wasn't. He was with Seattle. So he's Seattle and Washington. So this, as a running backs coach, he has coached Ricky Waters, Sander, Clinton Portis. He's been around. He's, you know, I it's probably a case he's ready for something
different.
He wants something more than just a position coach. Hopefully he gets it. And David Johnson tweeted out how he's going to miss him. Obviously, Stump Mitchell obviously had a very big influence on Johnson. As we saw in All or Nothing, it was Stump at the end of the season who kind of revealed that, whether this is completely true or not, or just coach speak, that in that room, in the war room, in the draft preparation, that Stump was the one pounding the table for Johnson, that he liked him better than all the other ones, including Todd Gurley, that saw something in him. And it was under Stump that Johnson flourished. I don't see this being a problem where Freddie Kitchens is going to be bad for him. Obviously, Freddie Kitchens is a very established coach. So I don't see any problems there. But it's just incident. And on a staff that you expected to see no changes, you have someone walk away on their own, and now you've got another Arians guy. I mean, good for Arians. I mean, you can tell, especially where he is in his career, not only is he coaching for himself, he is actively trying to promote and help his staff members. Often, you know, Harold Goodwin, you can tell he saw in Goodwin when they're in Pittsburgh, he's like, he's my guy. He's coming with me, and promoted him up each way. And Todd Bowles is the same way. Freddie Kitchens, it looks the same way. James Betcher. And now Byron Leftwich appears to be the latest of that.
Yeah. And, you know, they have what seems like a good coaching staff. I mean, so you would think that that's just going to continue and grow. So we'll see what kind of happens moving forward. You know, I just don't know what a quarterback's coach does in this room. Like, I'm really not trying to be rude. I just,
No, from what I understand, but what I heard from Arians is that it's more or less, especially in this situation, if it's with Palmer, it's another set of eyes, a guy who's very familiar with the offense, about reads, about sights, about progressions, and I would guess more than that of the concepts of the offense, of understanding how things go. I don't know how much in terms of, I'm sure quarterbacks deal a little bit with footwork and with arm motion and release, but it's probably more to do with anything else. It's the mental side and the preparation and everything like that.
Okay.
But I mean, don't know for sure. I can't help you with it.
I would understand, like, and I'm not saying that they don't need a quarterbacks coach or whatever, because they have Zach Dysart, you know, like you said, the in-game eyes and all of that stuff. Like, does Kitchens set up in the booth, I'm imagining?
Kitchens, I think, has been on the sidelines based on photos I've seen of him. He's a sidelines guy.
All right, then whatever. I don't know what they do then.
So that'll wrap up that segment. We're going to come back on Rise Up Sea Red in the next part of the show, and we're going to talk Senior Bowl, and we as in Seth's going to tell us about some of the players who stood out, perhaps draft stock going up or down. There are a couple of names that came up as the Cardinals are interested in kind of what we hear from that. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're going to talk about the Senior Bowl, or mainly I'm going to let Seth talk to you about the Senior Bowl, because outside of the biggest names, I'm not totally familiar with a lot of these prospects, and especially when you talk about the quarterbacks, it was quarterbacks 5, 6, 7, and 8 in terms of the prospect area that we saw in the Senior Bowl.
Oh, man, those guys are all awful. Not all of them, but most of them are not good.
Yeah, so what we're saying is none of them are the quarterback of the future for the Cardinals and aren't going to get drafted 13th overall?
Not from the Senior Bowl. Davis Webb's an interesting one, but in a weird, like, thing, he's got really small
hands. Offense.
But he's also got really small hands, like really small hands. So, you know, there's that weird thing. He's got a cannon for an arm. He easily had the best arm at the Senior Bowl. He's kind of in the all right. Like, we'll look at him in the
He's the throwaway Logan Thomas, John Skelton, Ryan Lindley pick, and if something happens, you're amazed, right?
Right, but he's probably going to go in round 4 or 5. So,
let's start with the names that came out that the Cardinals were reportedly into that impressed them. Three guys. One guy really should be no surprise was tight end O.J. Howard out of Alabama. Another was tackle, but projected to be a pretty dang good guard at the next level, Forrest Lamp. And then LSU linebacker Duke Riley. Is it Riley Duke or Duke Riley? Did I just mess that up?
I think it's Riley Duke. No, I don't know. Stupid.
It's like Pierre Olson Pierre. What are these? Anyway, so the O.J. Howard thing makes a lot of sense in terms of you have a really physical freak at tight end. I wrote a little bit about it in the sense that I thought at first when I was like, oh, he's Jermaine Gresham. That's not the comp, because he's not. He's taller and he's about 20 pounds lighter, so he isn't actually an ideal Bruce Arians tight end, because all of his tight ends have been 6'5", 260 or bigger. He's more of a Jimmy Graham, but he had the Bruce Arians offense role in Alabama, having to do a lot of blocking and that sort of thing. So I can understand the match there. And I'm guessing by all the reports of the Senior Bowl, everybody loved O.J. Howard. Is that not correct?
Yeah, and he's going to be – like, he probably is going to be off the board at 13 if we're being completely honest.
That's crazy.
But that's how talented he is. Like, he graded out, I believe – I'll have to look, or I'll ask one of their writers to make sure, but I'm pretty sure he graded out as the best run blocker, like, period. I think even offensive line, like, men involved in this, the best run blocker in college football in 2016. So he's basically, an extra offensive lineman in run situations. And then in passing situations, you know, he's allegedly going to run in the 4.5s. So,
oh, wow.
He's, you know, like you said, he's 6'6". He's going to measure in about 245, 250 and run 4.55 or something like that. He's a freak of nature. And so it's one of those things that, you know, he didn't put up these gaudy stats, but he produced when the ball was thrown to him. So, I mean, that's the – I just – like, I'd be really shocked if he was there at 13, if we're being completely honest.
Makes sense. It's a possibility. Forrest Lamp. A lot of guys.
My favorite, like, guard prospect. I like Dan Feeney a lot, too, the kid from Indiana. Lamp's interesting because – everybody wants to leave him at tackle, and I'm a big proponent of that. Like, oh, don't just think these guys have to move. But, like, he measured with, like, baby arms. Like
A.Q. Shipley.
Yeah, like, I think he was 31 and a half inches. So it was, yeah, it was short arms. So, you know, you watch him play. He held up Jonathan Allen and Tim Williams when they played Alabama. You know, he's a guy that I was thinking about before all the hype that he could be there at 45. I'm not sure he's going to be there at 45. But if he is, he would make a lot of sense because he does so many things in the sense that he can play right guard this year if that's where you want him. He can take over for Mike Iupati in 2018 if that's your cut, you know, the guy that you're cutting to save salary cap room. If not, if you're moving on from Jared Valdir, he can move out to right tackle in 2018. So he's versatile. He was even snapping at the Senior Bowl. So not that I think the Cardinals are in the market for a center, but, you know, it's the fact that
flexibility.
Yeah, exactly. It's the fact that he can do literally everything. He's one of these guys that you just watch him play, and it's never necessarily pretty, but it's all he wins all the time, and it's just like that's I like watching him play. He's been a favorite of mine. I caught on to him because of the kid, their receiver, Taywan Taylor, who I really like. It's just a matter of preference, but I think Lamp's going to be a real good one.
Duke Riley, I just double checked. It's Duke Riley out of LSU, another linebacker in the mold. He's not as big. He's not as big as Kevin Minter.
He's tiny.
But that's kind of the thing that Deion Jones was too. And he turned out to be pretty stinking good, it appears.
Yeah. You know, Riley's
6'1", 230 is what he's listed as of right now. But, you know, the Cardinals have a potential need there at inside backer if they decide to let Kevin Minter go. They could go with the speedy route and pair up Riley and Buchanan. What do you know about him other than the fact that he's and it seems to be kind of the new thing in the league is the quicker, lighter backer.
You know, he's one of these. Yeah, I mean, he is. He's quicker. He's lighter. Honestly, like I haven't watched a ton of him. He's the main guy that I like when I heard that I was like, huh? Like I didn't see that coming. He's a guy that he's a run and chase linebacker. He's like you said, he's speed. He's not a big guy. I'm trying to find his way in results. Duke Riley. Yeah, so he measured under 6'1" and he's 231 pounds. So I mean he's he's actually well put together, because he's not even 6'1". So, you know, it's interesting that he would be the guy that they were interested in when Riley wasn't, you know, necessarily one of the better linebackers that played in the game and during the week. But, you know, he kind of checks those boxes. I'm interested to see what he runs, because if he is, you know, quote unquote smaller, he's got to be able to move a little bit, right?
Hopefully.
So
he played, he played mostly special teams his first three units, which is a plus. And the Cardinals have a thing for LSU linebackers, obviously. Kevin Minter, I don't know how much the Cardinals looked at him, but Deion Jones was a guy that popped up in some mock drafts with the Cardinals. Lamar Lewis, undrafted guy, showed up, you know, in the preseason, made the roster to start things off and got hurt. But Duke Riley, the Cardinals do love themselves some LSU players, and it'd be an interesting thing to see how, the direction they go, especially if they decide to move on from Kevin Minter. So now,
well, so
that's about all I know. That's all I know. So you talk.
I'm reading about him, about his, what he's supposed to run. So you know what? Maybe, I mean, they're saying he could run in the low or in the high 4.4. So if he does that, you know, that's probably going to be what, you know, it entices everybody. NFL Draft Scout has him listed as as their seventh rated, like, off the ball linebacker. So that's about right. I mean, he's a day two guy. I got a text the day that I think it was Gambo talking about this.
Yes.
And I guess whoever texted me said, are they talking about Duke Riley at 13? And I'm like, I don't even know who that is. Like, what are you talking about? And so then I went back and listened. And so I think Gambo was given like if this was day one, day, you know, round one, round two, and round three type.
Perhaps, yeah.
So, and you know what? If he was there in the third round, that could make sense, because he's a guy that he's gonna have a lot of questions about him. Because, like I said, he is 6'1", or 6 foot and a half, 231 pounds. So he needs to run in that 4.5 range to be considered, you know, a viable option. Similar to, like you said, like his teammate last year, Deion Jones.
So who are the other players? So actually getting to the practice, the games, the game itself, the Senior Bowl. Who are players that stood out to you that perhaps might fit for the Cardinals, depending on where they're, you know, where they're drafted? But tell us more about some of these players. I did not see the entire Senior Bowl. I saw most of the second half, and the one thing that kind of caught my eye was the comment about ASU's kicker Zane Gonzalez, and the comment that Daniel Jeremiah made about how there was, I can't remember if it was a scout or some scouts of, you know, two decades of experience, said he was given that Gonzalez got the highest grade that they've ever given for a kicker. And, you know, that sort of went ablaze on Twitter for a bit, because the Cardinals could use a kicker. Not that they necessarily wanted to use a draft pick on it, more, you know, be the Buccaneers taking Roberto Aguayo in the second round, or the Raiders and taking Sebastian Janikowski in the first. But, you know, if there's a sure thing in terms of a kicker, he looks like it.
Yeah, and some of the guys that stood out, and I, you know, we actually talked about this last night on the Draft Breakdown podcast with Gonzalez, is, you know, the best kicker in the NFL is Justin Tucker, right? And he was undrafted. So it's not that you can't draft them. It's just that it has to be about opportunity cost, and what's it going to cost you to draft Zane Gonzalez? Is it going to be a third round pick or fourth round pick? Because that's probably not a good, you know, utilization of your picks. But, you know, like you said, if you get him in the fifth round or sixth round, I think it could make sense. the guys that really stood out in the Senior Bowl, the first one I wanted to mention was Hassan Reddick from Temple. I don't know if you heard about him during the game at all, but Reddick is a guy that he played kind of like an edge position at Temple, and they converted. I guess that's a terrible word because it was a week, but he was playing like an off ball position at the Senior Bowl. And Lance Zierlein of NFL.com compared him to Ryan Shazier. He's got some juice in him. He's super athletic. He's a long guy. He's 6'2". He measured in at 237. So he's going to be interesting to watch because I think he's going to end up being in that late first, early second round. So maybe if he's there at 45, he could be a guy. Again, if he moving into that inside linebacker role, I talked about Dan Feeney a little bit. I think he's probably the best guard, like pure guard in this class. He was completely dominant at the Senior Bowl the entire week. And he's just a guy like, again, I talked about it. I don't know if he's going to be there at 45, kind of like I was talking about with Forrest Lamp. But if he's there at 45 and you're saying, okay, we want a right guard this year, but he's going to be a left guard next year because we're going to move on from Mike Iupati, Dan Feeney's the guy. I mean, I think he's going to be – you know, there's no sure things, but I think he's going to be the closest thing to a sure thing. We've talked about the tight end position, obviously, with O.J. Howard. Evan Engram played really well. So he's just a different breed of tight end, right? Like he's going to be he's going to be more of a kind of a move tight end. He's going to be a guy that they line up around in different spots. They compare him kind of, I saw today without, you know, the murders, comparing him to Aaron Hernandez. So he's, you know, in theory, if he's your tight end opposite Jermaine Gresham, I don't think that's a bad thing. So, but again, that means that you have to get Gresham back because you have to have that tight end that can block and play in line more than Engram will. Montrevious Adams is a big dude from Auburn. I talked about him at the very beginning of the season. I thought he had the chance to be like the biggest riser in the draft, and he just never really took hold of it. He's got kind of a lazy streak, but he is when he's on, he is a dominant player. I don't know if they need a defensive lineman though. That's kind of the issue. And then the guy that Justin, you know, my co-host on the Draft Breakdown podcast has been touting all year. I don't think he's an option for the Cardinals because of his size, but he definitely showed while he was at the Senior Bowl that he is not going to back down from anybody. And that's DeMonte Kazi from San Diego State. I felt like he was probably the most aggressive and dominant kind of corner there. He reminds me of Brent Grimes, right? Like Grimes wasn't always the biggest dude, but he was always physical. Rappy. Yeah. And like, Rappy. And always did a good job in that role. So the kid that's going to be everybody's dream, I'm thinking as we move forward is, and he had a nice week at the Senior Bowl too, was, Rasul Douglas. Sorry. I was looking at something else. Douglas is 6'2", so when you talk about size, he's got that. So, you know, you wonder with these guys what, you know, why they didn't show out when they played at West Virginia or things of that nature. So I always worry when you see a guy like Douglas, is he going to move well enough? Like, is, or is he, you know, at 6'2", 200 pounds, is he going to be like Stanley Jean Baptiste? You remember the guy that the Saints drafted, I think it was 3 years ago, that was 6'3 and like 215. And then I think he's out of the league now. So that's, you know, that's always the question you have. Wide receivers, I'm going to tell you this, and everybody knows I'm anti-wide receiver early anyways, but you saw at the Senior Bowl why I don't want to draft a wide receiver at 13, whether it's Mike Williams or Corey Davis. And I think Corey Davis is going to be a phenomenal player in the NFL. I think Mike Williams has the chance to be a very good player in the NFL. But you saw Cooper Kupp, you know, a bigger 6'2", 200-pound wide receiver. Josh Reynolds is 6'3", almost 190. He can move. You had Zay Jones had a great game. He's a nice ball player. But, you know, and I've talked a lot about Taywan Taylor and the fact that I think he is a I think he's a carbon copy of Golden Tate in terms of ability to move with once he gets the ball in his hands. So are any of these guys number one receivers? Probably not. But how many teams with dominant number one receivers have had, you know, a ton of success? You look at Atlanta this year, and that's really the last one that I can remember. Demaryius Thomas is a nice player, but, you know, he was outpaced by Emmanuel Sanders. You know, the year before that, again,
Calvin Johnson had the whole years with the Lions, Flaherty Fitzgerald. Unless you're looking at Antonio Brown.
But he was drafted in the sixth round.
And he was overlooked.
So, I mean, I don't see the point of drafting a wide receiver early, because I think if you have two high end, you know, number two receivers, like you look at what New England has or what Seattle has, you know, you have guys that can make plays with the ball in their hand. Maybe they're not dominant, take over the game types, but they can make plays. I'm fine with that. So, and that's, again, that's not a shot at anybody. I think Corey Davis is going to be a really good player. I prefer him over Mike Williams, who just gives me a Michael Floyd vibe. And that's not like a bad thing. I think they're similar as prospects in the fact that I want to see Williams create more separation. But, you know, the Senior Bowl boasted a lot of talent. And outside of the quarterback position, which was completely atrocious. Davis Webb and Josh Dobbs are the only two players that played there that are really worth a draft pick. If somebody's going to draft Nate Peterman, I don't know why. But, I wasn't impressed with this grouping as a whole. It was kind of underwhelming and disappointing, and it made it harder to evaluate everybody else. Justin and I talked about it on the show last night. The offensive tackles in this group were similar to the quarterbacks, very bad. You now have all these questions on whether or not the edge players are actually good, or if those offensive tackles are just that bad. So that made that kind of difficult. We've talked, have we talked about on the show maybe a little bit that maybe they would take an edge player at 13?
Yes.
And, you know, franchise Chandler Jones and then move on from Jones next year and kind of try to get Marcus Golden at a discounted Chandler Jones rate. So, that's something I could see, but I think overall the week was okay. It was ran down by bad quarterback play, which unfortunately kind of dictates how those all-star games go. And so when you have bad quarterback play, you end up typically with a not so great game to watch. But you know what? The Cardinals are going to have a lot of options at 13. It's going to be interesting to see which way they go. Because I'm not sure what the best route is, but the only player at the Senior Bowl that I saw that was worth the 13th overall pick was probably OJ Howard. You could probably like sell me on Dan Feeney, but I just don't know if the Cardinals can invest the 13th overall pick in a right guard. and it's not a, you know, everybody wants to talk about it and say, oh, they need to invest in the offensive line. But it's like, they have, like they, at some point they need these guys to play up to their investment level. You know, the linebackers, I'm telling you, this is going to be a fun class of linebackers to watch. I'm not a Ryan Anderson fan from Alabama, but you have some guys with some juice that were at the Senior Bowl this weekend and that were not at the Senior Bowl. So it's going to be fun to watch. And I'm really interested in it, but the main names I would come away with, for the Senior Bowl are Hassan Reddick. Like I said, the guy transitioning from outside linebacker to an off-ball position, and I think you need to know about the offensive lineman, you know, Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney, in case those guys are available in the second round, so that way you're not like, oh man, why did we just draft another offensive lineman? Those guys are, I'm telling you, are going to be very good.
That makes sense. Well, that'll wrap up this next section of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, and we're going to come back and talk Super Bowl. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on Rise Up C-Red for the final segment, and it's Super Bowl time. So, you know, even though we do Cardinals stuff, we can talk about other teams. And we already talked about the matchup last week in terms of the intrigue. But now let's get down to the nitty-gritty. I don't know why, but maybe it's just boredom. Why are people doubting the Patriots? Yes, the Falcons have a dynamic offense. They're incredibly fun to watch, especially Cardinal fans. You see a team that the Cardinals should have been this year, but weren't, only with a better defense. Is it just that the people are rooting for the Falcons because they hate Tom Brady, and they hate the Patriots, and they're tired of seeing them in the Super Bowl? Or are there real concerns? Are the Patriots going to have their hands full?
I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a shootout more than anything. I think we're going to get, you know, in the mid to high 30s. In this game, you're going to see like a 35-31 type finish. I think it's going to be fun. I think we saw from game one, we knew that the Patriots were going to be good this year because they beat the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals had a chance to win at the end, but they beat the Arizona Cardinals at home on Sunday Night Football.
With Jimmy G.
With Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, it wasn't as much as the fact that the Cardinals had a chance to win that game, the Patriots really controlled the flow of that game. Like, I get that Catanzaro missed a kick at the end, but it felt like the Patriots just controlled the flow of that game. So, and then we saw the Falcons this year up close and personal, and the Cardinals hung with them for what, a quarter and a half, and then they just don't stop. And that's what you feel like. You feel like if they get a stop on you, you're toast. Like that's what you feel like, because I don't know if anybody outside of the Patriots could keep up with this Falcons team in terms of scoring. And we've seen that pretty much every week. The Seahawks couldn't keep up with them. The Packers couldn't keep up with them. So it is, you know, it's going to be a fun game to watch. I've gone back and forth. What do you think?
I honestly think this is going to be a Patriots beatdown. I really do. People are really excited. And there's a couple of things. One, the Patriots are absolutely on a mission. They feel, and they have been entering this season, this is as special a team as they've ever had. It's an incredibly balanced team. Number one in scoring defense, number three in scoring offense. There's really not a single weakness about this team. You've got Tom Brady in the passing game. You have LeGarrette Blount in the running game. You've got their incredibly difficult pass routes to defend. And Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola. You get a healthy Malcolm Mitchell back, and you've got a guy who can stretch the field. And the thing is, they're doing it without Rob Gronkowski. This Falcons team, I'll be honest with you, I remember the last time the Falcons went to the Super Bowl. They were another high-powered, Chris Chandler, who used to be Cardinals quarterback, playing at a Pro Bowl level, was playing out of his mind, Jamal Anderson with the running game, and they hit a buzzsaw in the Denver Broncos. And it was, it was Elway's farewell. And so you see what happens after you have an young up-and-coming team. And the main thing for me is that the Atlanta defense, for as much talent as they're starting four rookies. They were good during the season. There's promise there moving forward. And so there's a lot for them to build upon. I just don't think their defense is good enough to get a stop or two, because I'm certain that New England will be able to stop Atlanta. Atlanta's offense is good. It's fantastic. But Bill Belichick knows just what to do to disrupt what you want to do well. So they're going to – Julio Jones, they're going to figure something out. Now, and what's going to have to happen is – Mohamed Sanu and Taylor Gabriel are going to have to step, which are very, as Cardinals fans are very capable of doing it. But I just think that this Patriots team is just too much. And statistically, you look at a team that can score and defend extremely well against a team that can score but doesn't defend really well. Historically, you're looking at a game that's not going to look good. And I think it's going to be a Patriots blowout. It's what I predicted. I think a 37-17 score. And yeah, it's a bummer of a thing. I said, honestly, I think the Patriots are going to overmatch them. And that feel good story of the Falcons is going to come to a grinding halt to say, oh, they're the Cardinals of last year, only in the Super Bowl.
I think this is going to be a close game. I'm going to take the Falcons. I'll take them 35-31 over the Patriots. I think it's going to be a fun game. It's one of those games where you look at it and you can see that both teams are talented. The question is whether or not the Falcons can continue to score at the pace they have. They have a good defense, but you do have questions about their ability to stop this Patriots offense, which is just kind of like a well-oiled machine, right?
Yeah, and you see, it doesn't even matter who you put in there, because no one – I mean, Chris Hogan, who is he? And exactly. He's to start the year, he was the guy that scored that 38-yard touchdown on a blown coverage by Brandon Williams that kind of started everything off. So they just know exactly what they need. I'm hoping for a good game, because this is such an intriguing game, because you've got the Patriots fan base, which is big, and you've got history there, because you can get Belichick and you can get Tom Brady a fifth Super Bowl ring, where he then is surpassing Joe Montana. And you've got, seven Super Bowls this decade. So you've got seven Super Bowls this decade. And – there's history there. That said, the Patriots are such a polarizing team. So many teams hate them. Tom Brady, people hate him because he's so good. And it's the almost ridiculous. And then there's the whole aspect of the history of the Patriots, you know, going beyond the line. There's Deflategate, Spygate. Just you get the feeling that they're going to try and find some way to get away with something that they shouldn't. So people will tune in. And then there's the Falcons, which is an incredibly great story, intriguing. They're exciting to watch. Matt Ryan with an amazing year. So this is a game worth watching. So hopefully it's entertaining because, yeah. I mean, if there's anything that football fans need, it's an entertaining Super Bowl, especially in a playoffs of the postseason that's been absolutely atrocious in terms of intrigue. Games have been blowouts. And for those fan bases, it's fantastic. But in terms of a casual fan paying attention to football, it hasn't been fun football to watch, and we're hoping to find one this weekend.
Yeah, and that's the goal. But again, I'll be at home for the first time in a month, so, or 5 weeks, actually. So I'm going to have a good time no matter what.
Sounds good. Any particular matchups that you see as being key as we look at the Super Bowl? And, you know, I look at what do the Patriots do to the running game for Atlanta? Because as great as their passing game is, it really, I believe, it stems from their ability to really move the ball on the ground. That opens everything up because they've got Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. And if they can stop that, it really will limit the Atlanta offense and will turn them into, if we want to say, if we're looking at the Cardinals, you see what they had when they had a running game with their passing game. And then when that running game went away, they became hit and miss instead of Atlanta's incredibly efficient. They just keep coming at you. If you can limit that running game, it's going to be hit and miss because they're going to have a couple incompletions, tip passes here and there. And so it'll stall those drives where instead of getting 7, you're getting 3, or instead of getting 3, you're getting 0, and they have to punt.
Yeah. And the thing is with Atlanta, that their weapons come from like 19 different areas, right? Like outside of tight end, they have an enviable offense, and their tight ends do enough to make you respect them. And so, you know, you look at the defense for the Patriots and what they do, you know, can they consistently shut down that Atlanta attack? Because I don't, you know, like you said, I don't know if Atlanta's defense can kind of hold on against that New England offense that we know is going to come out, spread the field, and throw the ball, get rid of the ball quick. LeGarrette Blount's going to do a nice job in the backfield. The question becomes, can, you know, we've seen the way you have to beat the Patriots, and it's you have to give the opponent pass rush enough time to get there, right? And so the question becomes, can the Falcons do that? Are they, you know, are they good enough to do that? Vic Beasley and Dwight Freeney are nice. I don't know if they have the inside juice on the interior to really disrupt Brady and make him uncomfortable consistently. But I'm still going to stick with my pick that they're going to win just for fun. But you know, that's where the question is going to become. Can they get enough pressure from the interior to really throw Brady off?
And that's going to be key. Larry Fitzgerald's rooting for the Patriots. I don't know if it's for the history or if simply because Michael Floyd's on that team. Cardinals fans have another reason for a lot of them to root against the Patriots because Michael Floyd is on the team. And after his atrocious season added to his, you know, you know, very conspicuous ending to his Cardinals career, he might end up with a ring, although he probably is not going to be active for the game, would you imagine?
No. No, I mean, he got benched last week.
Yeah, so yeah. So there you go. Seth's picking the Falcons. I'm picking the Patriots. He's picking them in a shootout. I'm picking the Patriots in a blowout. I'm personally hoping for a shootout either way, because that's fun. There's not going to be a defensive struggle. Let's not think about that. It's not going to happen. So next time you hear from us, it will be all out off season. The Pro Bowl's done, the Super Bowl will be done, and we can look forward to some more. We're going to look forward to some more Cardinals off season talk, free agency draft, and that's what's coming up over the next few weeks. I think the plan is to have a show next week, and then we'll probably slow down to every couple of weeks, perhaps. I think I've got that calendared like that. But that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast with Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. You can find the show in a number of ways. So if you found us on CardsWire, we're there. We're on Revenge of the Birds, featured there. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio, which is the fine site that hosts our podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, anywhere you can find any great podcasts. Hopefully we're among them there. On Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red, and on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. That'll wrap up this show. And here's to a good Super Bowl. Go Cardinals.